of the House Special Committee on Energy to order at 10:18 a.m. Today is Thursday, March 14th. Present, we have Representative Zolkowski, Vice Chair Representative Sponholz, Representative Rauscher, Representative Pruitt, and myself, Chair Representative Hopkins. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. And assisting us today is our recording secretary, Butch Carver, and our LIO moderator, Tom Raymond. My committee aide, Joe Hardenbrook, is also there in the back today. Our meeting time is only going to be 1 hour today so that we can accommodate the House Finance Budget Subcommittee. That's going to be starting up at 11:15, so I'm hoping to end by then so we can pass the gavel over to Representative Ortiz. Like I said, that gives us just 1 hour to hear House Joint Resolution 10. Anybody have any questions on any of that? All right. Today we have HJR 10 by Representative Tallarico supporting the Road Belt Electric Line. It is the intent of the chair to hear two presentations first. Then we'll hear from the bill sponsor, take any public testimony, and then hopefully pass the resolution from committee. We're going to begin today with two presentations, first from the Copper River Development Association and then the Copper Valley Electric Co-op. Mr. Hoke and Mr. Duhamel, if you guys would please come forward and sit at the little table here and put yourself on the record and go ahead and begin your presentations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jason Hoke. I'm the president of the board for the Copper Valley Development Association. We are the regional arter through the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And I'm also the programs director for Otna Intertribal Resource Commission. I work on energy, biomass, and other resources in the Copper Valley as well. And thank you very much for having me here.
Thank you. I'll introduce myself when mine comes up.
Yes. Okay, this is not the Ribbit's first rodeo, Road Belt Interties first rodeo. The legislature has looked at this in the 80s, the 90s you even funded it. It was somewhat controversial at that time, but we're moving forward in a much calmer, more placid manner, and hopefully we can get this done. The studies are there on this website, Copper Valley Electric Association has been kind enough to put that up on their website. There are multiple studies. There's even been some studies AEA performed when they were looking at Susitna-Wantana and running this intertie as well.
Real fast, if anybody has any questions, just let me know and we can wait till the end of the slide and we'll get any questions so we don't interrupt.
Okay. The current project is proposed, we broke it down in a couple of phases. Phase one would be from Sutton to Glen Allen to Delta Junction, approximately 286 miles. That's your larger line at 138 kilovolts to 245 kilovolts. Phase two is a smaller subtransmission line that would go from Gakona up the Toke cutoff to Toke and then back up to Delta Junction, approximately 227 miles. That's estimated at about 65 kilovolts. We could utilize the existing rights of way with this. There's about 100 miles total in gaps. That's even between MEA in both phases. MEA and Copper Valley, there's a little bit of a gap there in the rights of way. There's a 14-mile gap on the Toke cutoff, and I think around 50 miles up on the Alaska Highway between Healy Lake and Dot Lake. So a lot of this is already done. It's just not the larger lines. Completes a bus loop around the road system of the interior of Alaska connecting to the rail belt. What's a bus loop? Runs in a round and around in a circle. And if it's cut off at one point, then all of the other areas can fill in with electricity. So you're not going to lose power. Not for very long anyways. And it's a redundant loop. We're talking about an electrical grid the size of Montana. Which kind of blows my mind. Last year it was mentioned in Senate Energy and Resources in D.C. with Senator Murkowski, and it was kind of mind-blowing that there's an area this large in the United States of America on a road system that's not connected by grid. These are some maps I have for folks, in case you're unfamiliar with the parts of the interior and the road system. The larger map is a much more current and detailed map. On it, you can see all of the communities that it hits. You can see the pipeline route. I don't have a pointer, but phase one going from down there, connecting to the rail belt, up through Chickaloon, past Tulsona to Glen Allen, then north along the pipeline route to Delta Fort Greeley. Phase two would be the Gakona to Tok and Tok back up. This map shows mining potentials, renewable energy potentials, communities, pipeline needs, and military needs along the route. The lower map in the corner is more your basic. The black line is your existing rail belt for power. Red would be phase one, blue would be phase two. Public planning and vetting. You know, I'm sorry, but I, you know, so you can plan and plan. I believe in the, well, in the Marine Corps they say six P's, but for public comment I will say five P's. Proper planning prevents poor performance. And we have planned and planned and planned and planned. And sooner or later, you just got to get out there and do it. This was the number one priority with the Copper River Regional Energy Plan with Alaska Energy Authority. It was in the top, when I say top priorities, I mean the top three of the Alaska statewide energy plan with the AEA. It is top priority for Copper Valley Regional SEDS, the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. It was also part of the statewide SEDS, a top priority, and that was with USEDA and the Alaska Division of Economic Development. It's the number one priority for the Otna Tribal Energy Plan. It is a top priority for the Tananaw Chiefs Conference Energy Planning through USDA or through U.S. Department of Energy, Office of Indian Energy. Tananaw Chiefs, who's also been a partner of ours, has also listed as a top priority, and it is a top priority in the Fairbanks North Star Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy as well. You'll find that on page 4 and 5 of the Fairbanks North Star SEDS, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Support and resolutions. Well, you know, we've been working at this for quite a while, a couple of years now. AFN put it forward as its top resolution, its only resolution for energy in 2017. We have 12 tribal governments, 12 village corporations, 4 ANCSCAs, Otna Intertribal, Tananaw Chiefs, Copper River Native Association, the Native Village of Chickaloon, many, many more have signed on to this. This is about helping people in this side of the state, and especially those on the microgrid. We have support from the utilities, Copper Valley Electric Association, Alaska Power and Telephone, MEA, Golden Valley. The Alaska Power Association itself has rendered a board resolution in support of these efforts. Copper Valley Development, the regional ARDER, quasi-governmental organization with the Department of Commerce, has been wholly behind this, as well as the Chamber of Commerce for the Copper Valley. We've had many meetings and discussions along the route with communities recently. I think that was maybe one of the issues back in the 90s, is nobody went and listened to what those folks had to say. You know, talk to them. Where's the best route? How much do you need this? Is this really needed? It's been unanimous, yes. Okay, so we're kind of working our way through here. You know, in business, you got to have kind of a lot of negotiables, you know. 97% of things are negotiable. Only 3% are not. We haven't found too many things that are non-negotiable. One or two, but everything else I think is negotiable. And here we have a large group of folks that are behind this effort. Current costs and consumptions inhibiting development. Most communities in this area pay 300 to 500% more than the national average, which is 12 cents a kilowatt hour. For instance, in Chitna, without PCE, they're paying 88 cents a kilowatt hour. Chistochina, Cheshire Tribal Council just had a beautiful washateria water system, pellet boiler system installed. The electric rates tripled because of this system. That's quite a bit in a community of about 83 people. We have to think of how this is affecting those folks, 300 to 500% more than the national average. Communities are electrified by multiple microgrids, consuming approximately 4 million gallons of diesel per year. Emissions and other issues plague these communities. Besides just the emissions and the hauling of 4 million gallons of fuel, you have to look at workforce development. You know, who's out there to work on these generators, take care of it when the power goes down, things like that. PCE does not cover commercial electricity, which is approximately 60% of all electrical consumptions in these communities. What does that mean to the state? Who's paying for the electric in that 60%? I'll tell you who's paying for it. DOE or DOT, the school districts, Department of Education, post offices, small private businesses. And we have, you know, some private businesses out there that are, you know, they're paying $8,000 in a mom-and-pop grocery store in a small village per month in electricity. Kind of hard to run a business on that. Electrical costs directly correlate to business and residential closure and relocation. We've seen in my region alone a number of businesses and an out-migration of population occurring. Businesses closing down. It was commented there was only one place to eat in all of Glen Ellen. You know, costs are high, and it's tough to run in the wintertime a business.
Quickly, let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Fields. Thank you. You may continue.
Yep. Economic and natural resource development. Cheaper electrical power opens doors for BRE, that's business retention and expansion, and allows business plans to pencil out. We had a Three Bears look at opening up a store in Glen Ellen. Didn't pencil out with electricity. In 2012, Mr. Bovee of Otna and myself met with a man from Oklahoma who was interested in possibility of opening up an OSB factory. It's a pressed particle board like plywood. Okay, a lot of the timber in my neck of the woods is good for that. Not good for so good for saw logs, but, you know, good for that. Doesn't pencil out because of electricity. This is a necessary infrastructure for any economic development. You know, being an auditor for the last 10 years, I've seen a lot of you down here, and I've been to a lot of meetings, and you know, it's kind of hard to get economic development going when you're paying a lot for power and energy. The timber and lumber industry can definitely be developed. Like I said, OSB manufacturing, lumber mills, biomass brick plants, such as in Gulkana. Even the Superior would probably benefit from cheaper energy. Mining operations that could be opened or benefit, Fort Knox, Pogo. Some of these are not even on the map yet because they did not pencil out. Stellar Mine, Attell Creek Mine, the Tetlin Mine, Fourth of July Creek Mine. More and more. These are large job producers of the resource. Tourism, fishing, transportation, they all benefit. You know, Valdez will benefit from this. They're starting to open up and expand the port there. As a matter of fact, Grant Uren with Samson Barge and Tug informed me they just now got 720 plug-ins. What does that mean? Those nice Connex plug-ins for refrigerated fish. We have several processing plants down there as well. Tourism, definitely, that goes without saying. Transportation, you know, the airports, the businesses along the road. One that I forgot to put in here, which is can't believe I forgot, my wife's going to come, we have a small farm ourselves, is agriculture. You know, the state of Alaska invested a lot of money. And the federal government invested over $2 million in diverting the pipeline, creating the Tonsina North Ag Development, just outside of Copper Center. Thousands of acres of land that's been cleared for agricultural development. They're off the grid. Try and pump water on a Honda generator. Doesn't work for 100-acre fields. Doesn't work so well. So, they need electricity. You know, they need cheaper power than being off the grid. Alyeska Pipeline, we've met with them. They have a couple of non-grid connected pump stations. They would definitely benefit from cheaper power. Military benefits and buildup. Energy is national security. Energy is national security. I think that's somewhere else around here. I don't know. Military bases that would benefit: Black Rapids Training Facility, Donley Dome, Fort Greely, Eielson Air Force Base, Fort Wainwright, Clear LIDAR. Last year, I had the privilege of meeting three-star General Wills Bach, charge of PACCOM. We had a lengthy discussion on this, and he was a definite proponent of getting redundant, reliable energy to the military. And I think it's part of our obligation is to support our national defense. Currently, there's an 80-megawatt bottleneck at Eva Creek on the rail belt. We're offering, if you remember the map, a redundant loop around there. Okay, we can offer more megawatts and also have it coming from a different direction, which has all of these value-added benefits besides that of economic development, natural resource development, helping the military, helping the pipeline out. If all of these things with the pipeline, with oil production in Alaska come to fruition, the pipeline's going to need a lot more power to push all that oil through. Reduced costs for military with cheaper energy and redundancy is necessary, as is 25% renewable. They are under mandate. Otherwise, what are they doing? They're going to have to build their own generation plants and millions of gallons of fuel to back them up. Some other information. I took this from Maslow. Any of you recovering psychologists out there? Hierarchy of needs for infrastructure. Energy, transportation, and communication. Those are your three main cruxes of building infrastructure. We already have two. We have the road system, and we have high-speed internet in most of these communities out there. I mean, we're touting 4G throughout most of those regions. What we're lacking is cheaper energy. New industry and economic development means potentially new revenue for the state. I know you folks are all looking for other avenues for revenue. Mines, agriculture, timber, resource development, economic development, small business development, these all add up to revenue generators for the state of Alaska. Our region is an unorganized borough, and you are our governing body. You are our governing body. I think that's the way it's going to stay for a long, long time. And so we beseech you to please acknowledge this bill. This is also about people. And, you know, I came to Alaska in 1996 as a teacher and administrator in Chistochina, small village. And I see some of my students leaving. What's it going to be, groceries or the electric bill? How far is my dollar going to go in Chistochina, Alaska? Or do I have to move to Wasilla or Fairbanks or outside to the lower 48 where many are going? All right, this isn't just about industry. This is also about people. People on the road system that I believe this legislature has an obligation to. So what do we need from you? Need your support. We're looking at getting the recon money. $2 million, soup to nuts, for an engineer's report. The outcome of this proposed reconnaissance study would be an actionable document to define a path forward for project development, a timeline, and milestone tables, beneficiaries, project participants, and indicative pricing and budget. The estimated time when we talked to Dryden and LaRue Engineering, which does a lot of transmission consulting, was about 9 months to complete the recon. Total cost of the project estimates, phase one, $200 to $300 million, about two F-22s. That put it in perspective for the general when I did meet with him. Phase two, about $100 million, about the cost of an Abrams tank. Where is this coming from? Oh, my God. We have no money. You're all looking at me like, yeah, and what do you want us to do about it, right? It is expected that the U.S. Department of Defense, the U.S. Department of Energy, Interior, Commerce, and Agriculture, along with Alaska state agencies, would be approached and contribute towards the project deployment and construction, as well as beneficiary utilities, communities, and organizations. There's no silver bullet on this. Nobody's going to pull it out of the wallet and pay for this thing all on their own. We're going to have to collectively come up with this. But let's start with just some support here. And good old Kermit the Frog. Questions, comments, cries of outrage?
I have a question. How much was it expected to have cost in the 90s when it was shelved at that time?
I believe it was around $125 million. Mr. Duhamel, you might know that a little bit better than me.
There was never real, or through the chair, I'm sorry. The original project never got to
putting
cost.
Yourself on the record, too, just before you say your name.
Well, I'm sorry.
That's
all
right.
John Duhamel, and I'll be speaking soon. from Copper Valley Electric Association. So the original concept that came out of the state didn't get into the details of looking at cost. However, one portion of it was looked at by Copper Valley Electric, and we did look at the cost. It was about $100 million, and that is from the Sutton to Glen Allen leg of this loop feed. That equates to somewhere near $1 million a mile, and going forward, I think we're talking about a 30-40% increase because we waited in time. That'd be my estimate.
Did you see any opposition at this time around that you ran into in the 90s trying to develop this project? Has anybody spoke out against it? Or
yeah? I don't think opposition in the, for the project itself. I think some of the communities we talked to, like down in Sutton, Chickaloon, Glacier View, they were concerned about where it's going to go. Is it going to be overhead? Is it going to be underground? I validate their concerns wholeheartedly. I want to work with those communities to ensure that they're happy as well. But I think in theory, they are behind it, especially since it's such a large military necessity at this point.
Representative Rauscher?
Yeah, I'm going to add a little bit here. I'm not really have any questions. Obviously, I'm from the Sutton area, and it did, one time we did talk about this, as John Hamill had mentioned, that, and the I thought the price tag was closer to 80, but it could have been $100 million. There were some questions from the community and of Sutton. The community of Sutton, along with the Chickaloon tribe, had put up some opposition, and I believe most of it had to do with site, looking at a transmission line. And I think one of the things when we all met, and I was part of the group that met about a couple years ago, there was John Harris Atma, I think maybe Dave Tallarico, Representative Tallarico might have been there, but so some of the concerns was getting past some of the concerns that we had many years ago when we looked at this project. And Mr. Hoke has gone painstakingly through all the communities trying to mitigate a lot of the problems that we had, a lot of the people that had certain reservations about the project many, many years ago were contacted. We've looked into how to work with them on the problems that they saw or the things that they, and one of the things was, as Mr. Houck had mentioned, is location. So if we follow the existing route, that's less of a deterrent for people, because what they wanted to do is cut through the back valley of a lot of the areas, and that kind of bordered some private land, and it bordered native land, and it bordered a lot of what they didn't want to look at. And then there was a thought of going underground, so we were able to mitigate that also in this process. I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I think that's where you're headed. And I think with the letters that we have of recommendation from these communities now, and the community councils that were visited, and the understanding that we have with them now, is that there is an overall approval to help make this happen. A lot has changed since you're right, that first proposal, and I'm really looking forward to connecting the dots there on this loop, and I think it would benefit the state. I actually co-sponsored Representative Tallarico's piece of legislation because I believe in it, and I'm from the area, and I just talking to the people, as long as we can mitigate some of the problems that we ran into last time, I don't believe we're going to be faced with those this time. So I do support this bill.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you.
Mr. Duhamel, why don't you put yourself on the record once again and start your presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was Jason's job to carry about 90% of the water here, and I have 10%. I actually sit before you with several hats on. One is the Chief Executive Officer of Copper Valley Electric Association. I'm also a director on the Board of Directors of the Alaska Power Association, as Jason mentioned, also supports the initiative. And I'm also the chairman of the APA Hydropower Group. So I present to you just our position on HJR 10, and that is in support of the project, in support of your resolution. But before I tell you from a utility perspective why this is a good idea, I need to drag you down into the gutter with me and just talk about utility stuff for a little bit. For those that aren't familiar with how utilities work, so when a utility talks about power, we usually refer to it as distribution power or transmission subtransmission power. Distribution power is lower voltage. This is where the power goes to the end user. The end user we refer to as residential, customer, commercial, small commercial, large, or sometimes industrial. And those assets are managed by the utility. There's no question about that. We don't necessarily refer to distribution power as infrastructure. Transmission and subtransmission, however, is a little bit different. It's high voltages. It moves power between communities, so much like roads do. It is definitely an infrastructure item, although a lot of people don't look at transmission of power as infrastructure. That's kind of one of our key messages that we wanted to relay to you today, is we need to start looking at transmission as infrastructure, and that means they should be funded through state or federal means and not necessarily from the utilities. The utilities are looking at their rate payers and they don't want to increase their rates. Some of these infrastructure projects benefit the state as a whole, and it's hard for a utility that only represents a certain number of customers in a certain area to fund things that are going to go outside their area of responsibility. So the road belt intertie that Jason introduced today is really a transmission, sub-transmission project only, and we envision it would be state-managed.
Mr. Chair. Representative Sponholz.
Thank you. What's the difference between transmission and sub-transmission?
Through the chair, to our representative. Transmission and sub-transmission is purely a difference in voltage from a utility perspective, and you led right into my next slide where I show how transmission is much higher voltage in the 238,000 volt range, whereas sub-transmission is down in the 69 to 45,000 volts. The reason we call it sub-transmission is when we need to move a lot of energy, sometimes we don't need enough for an entire Fairbanks, but we do need enough energy to take care of maybe Valdez. You would push, if you're pushing power to Fairbanks, you're going to push transmission, a lot of energy. If you're going to push to Valdez, we would go sub-transmission. And the reason I bring it up is, as Jason said, you look at the price tag, it looks big. Transmission facilities are large. The lines are large. The facilities that hold the lines are large. They all have to be rated for all that extra weight, and that's what drives the costs up. Distribution, which is the lower portion of the picture here, that's where it gets to the end user. Smaller lines, smaller poles, Sometimes we go underground when we go into a community where there's a lot of users, and we just don't want those overhead poles. But transmission can go underground as well, and that was one of the topics we talked to Sutton about, was their concern was the overhead lines, and there are times when you can go underground with transmission as well.
Representative Pruitt, you had a question?
Yeah, well, and I don't know, maybe this is too large for this particular time, but, I mean, doesn't this get into the larger conversation about the hodgepodge of ownership on both transmission and other, especially in the rail belt? You know, we've got six different utilities, but among there, some of the utilities own some of the transmission, the state has some of the transmission, and then when it's time to replace it, it's whose ownership is it, who is in charge of it, whose turn is it to take care of it? Isn't this, if we're going to create basically a kind of a circle here, wouldn't it be time to talk about having a separate transmission utility to basically take the ownership of all of the transmission, and therefore through that they also would be able to go to the RCA and ask for maybe a postage stamp type charge to be able to prepare for those repairs, as opposed to now where you can't. Yeah, you can't include, for instance, and I know in the rail belt specifically, we need some repair of transmission going down to the Kenai area. But you know, they can come to us and ask for the additional money to repair it because they're not allowed to basically charge us over the course of the last 50 years that's been in play to be able to save to replace it. It opens up the conversation, if we're going to do this and create a circle, that we create a unified transmission utility and allow it to take the ownership and not put the onus all constantly back on either us or the federal government in the end to be able to maybe come through and fund it.
Through the chair to Representative Pruitt, excellent statement. That work is actually already underway. The RCA is working with the rail belt to get a transmission system manager in place. I don't know how that's going to look. It's going to take a while, I think, before they iron out how it all looks and how you get onto the system. Our project's a long-term project. Before you could ever see the benefit of this, it would probably be 10 years away. Our assumption would be that that's all resolved by the time we get there, and that the ability for us to jump into an entire state grid will be established and easy to do. The lower 48 does this, so it's not impossible to do. The lower 48 is more of a hodgepodge than any Alaskan grid would ever look like, and they're doing it, so I think we can too. But that definitely is a different topic for a different place, but I know that work's underway.
Yeah, follow up.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I think while your project is 10 years out, I think it's really worth the conversation at this point in terms of what if the federal government doesn't come through with the $200+ million, if you have an entity that potentially can bond with a postage stamp rate, which was what I would expect they would be able to do, you might be able to fill in any of the voids of underfunding that you might need to be able to make this happen. I think it's part of a larger conversation about the road belt and rail belt energy reliability. So, anyways, I'll probably have other questions as you go, but appreciate it.
Through the chair to Representative Pruitt. Point well taken.
Again, we only have about 20 minutes left.
Okay.
For the committee, so.
I will, I'll go pretty quick here. I wanted to explain what a grid is. I think you all get that here. The bigger the grid, the more resilient it is. Right now, some of the communities that Jason described, when a tree touches their grid, which is a very, very small grid, everyone loses power, and they could be out of power for a long time, whereas a very large grid, a tree can hit the line. You might not lose a single customer due to an outage and still get in, make the repair. So the larger the grid, the better. So I want to stress that the bigger we make the grid, the more reliable the power is. Fluctuations occur with renewable energy. As you know, wind and solar change the sun. Clouds block the sun. Wind changes constantly. What a bigger grid does is it allows us to accept more renewable energy onto the grid. And Jason already mentioned it, power moves in any direction. So if you have a loop feed type system, a break in the transmission system anywhere along the way, doesn't mean you've lost power to a community. You can reroute power around that loop feed and actually get right to the point where the break is in the transmission line, and maybe just a few customers might be out as opposed to entire communities that are out. Other things that I want to point out is there is something we call quantity of scales, where the more people on a grid, the more people paying in, the cheaper the power. The reason for that is your power plants are more efficient, and you have more people paying for that the base cost that it takes to run a utility. And I'm going to go real quick here. So Jason mentioned this is not a new concept. I pulled this chart right out of the Alaska Energy Policy Task Force from 2003. The dotted line shows what we're proposing here, and that is the connect-in. The solid lines are the rail belt. This is a graph Jason already showed you as well, but I put what I call the window of opportunity in this square or rectangle box that we have here. Communities, all of those people, tribes, businesses, they're all on their own. Those are all isolated grids.
Mr. Duhamel, if you could just wrap up the presentation really quickly so we can get Representative Tallarico on. Thank you.
Okay, I'll jump right to the end, and we recommend you approve the resolution. It gives us credibility when we go to Washington, D.C., and we ask for funds. We're not expecting the state to fund this. We think, as Jason said, there's multiple sources out there, and your support of this joint resolution helps us when we go to Washington, D.C. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions before you step down? All right. Thank you. Representative Tallarico, and please come forward and put you and your staff on the record and make some comments about the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity, and I thank the committee members for hearing House Joint Resolution 10 today. I don't think there's a lot that I can add to what the guy said, and I'm not going to read you my sponsor statement because I think you all have it. So, and I know you, I know personally for a fact that you all know how to read. So. A couple of things I would like to stress, though, that we've talked about. This inspiration came to me as I know that we're all aware that the Department of Defense has certainly made a determination to put substantial investment into the state of Alaska, particularly at Fort Greely and Eielson Air Force Base. I think we're all aware of the F-35s at Eielson Air Force Base and the investment that's going on, and the news that Fort Greely now is going to add more silos. And so the inspiration really came to me, and you were all there with me, I think, during our joint sessions. And I believe we had one of our U.S. senators had told us how important it is sometimes to get a resolution from the Alaska legislature if we need anything. And I thought, well, this is an opportunity for us for the road belt intertie. In my estimation, the real winner here is actually the Department of Defense and the ability to have this loop through and connect both Eielson Air Force Base and Fort Greely to another power source if that need arises. And as we were being told that about the resolution, I had remembered something that I was told during the earthquake that we'd had, which was very substantial, did quite a bit of damage, but also did some damage to the grid. And what I was told by the utility that I'm in is it was the one time that our inner tie that we currently have was able to provide power. Since there was an interruption in the energy that was coming from the south into the Anchorage area, that intertie provided power into the Anchorage Bowl, which was very substantial for our emergency response folks and everyone that was going out there to assist people, during an absolutely horrific event that we had in South Central Alaska. So I, considering that and thinking about the necessity of our military installations, and they have now been, I think, nationally recognized and identified as being critical to our national defense system, I think this is the time for us to go to the federal government, and I don't want to say that they necessarily had their cart before the horse, but with what they're doing at Fort Greely and at Eielson Air Force Base, I think this would be a critical piece of infrastructure to keep that available. My request really in the resolution is for full federal funding of the road belt intertie system, and then the advantages that we will receive off of that are absolutely tremendous in my area.
I think Representative Zolkowski, you have a question?
Actually, I think Representative Tarico, you might have just answered that. I was just hoping to reconcile in the initial presentation that we heard this morning that it's expected that there are several federal agencies along with state agencies, but then the second presentation said no state funding, so it's helpful to hear you clarify that it would be to pursue full federal funding.
Thank you very much, through the chair. Representative Zolkowski, I guess the best way I could say it, I would fully support 100% federal funding to do the road belt intertie, and I really do think that in particular the Department of Defense is the big winner in this intertie as well. But we have the energy available through our utilities. We can certainly produce enough to keep this very viable and be able to provide this for the local communities as well. So I think it really would work out to everyone's advantage.
Has the Department of Defense expressed any concerns about the electric grid that we have these facilities in the interior?
Mr. Chairman, I have not personally had them tell me that they had any big issues with it. I know that in the past they have participated in the discussions about getting the intertie in and developing the full loop. So I know they're certainly aware of that. They also, from a money-saving standpoint, they have several facilities along the way, I think, that would they can take advantage of being, if this is
I think installed. Mr. Hoke had something to say about that. If you want to step forward and just put yourself on the record real quick.
It was presented to me that Assistant Secretary of Defense for Environment, Energy, and Infrastructure, Lucian Niemeyer, in his confirmation testimony, had testified to Senator Sullivan that he would be working with the folks in Alaska for a road belt intertie if necessitated by military buildup.
Thank you, sir.
And I have that document if you need it.
Representative, would you like to keep going? Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think there's anything else I could really add other than, I know you've probably read the same plaque that I did. I think it was from 1939, General Billy Mitchell. It's on Eielson Air Force Base. And way back then, General Mitchell had determined that the strengthening the military in Alaska and the people that controlled the air up here probably would control the Northern Hemisphere. And for us to go to them and see if they'd like this reliable energy to make them even more efficient just seems to make sense to me at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative, for your presentation. Now that we've brought the bill forward, I would like to see if there are any amendments that we need to make today. First amendment up is amendment number one. Representative, Vice Chair, Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, Chair Hopkins, I move amendment number one.
I object for discussion. Would you like to?
So, amendment number one is being introduced at the request of the bill sponsor, and it just clarifies a drafting error on page 2, line 6. It replaces the word state with the word region. While this area is as big as the state of Montana, it is not as big as the state of Alaska, and so we're just correcting that error.
All right, thank you. I remove my objection. There being no further objections, Amendment 1 is adopted. Are there any further amendments? I'm guessing no. All right. I'm going to go ahead and open it up for public testimony. Is there anybody in the room who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and open it up for anybody at the LIOs or around the state. I do not. Do I have anybody? I do. I have, let's see. Mr. Kane, are you there in Glen Allen?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Hopkins. This is Bruce Kane. I'm the president of the Copper Valley Chamber of Commerce. And I'll just be very brief. I think everything's been covered that I was going to talk about, except that the Copper Valley Chamber of Commerce is in full support of this proposal. proposal. We have submitted letters of support in the past. Our Chamber of Commerce represents 200 business members that are operating in our area or have interest in our area. And reducing the cost of electricity is a very big concern of ours. And we have that as our number one priority for economic development is this growth of Center Five. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kane, for your testimony. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony now. It's closed. At this point, I would entertain a motion to move the bill from committee.
Chair Hopkins, I move House Joint Resolution 10 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you very much. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, the committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 10 passes from committee. We're going to go ahead and go at ease real quick so that we can go and sign the committee report. Back on the record, we're going to gather up the Special Committee on Energy at 11:07 a.m.